fellow geek brethren, you have come to the right place for all of your gaming, gadgets, technology, anime, video games, comic books, and anything else you can think of. It is GeekSpeak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, live from Brooklyn, New York, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to GeekSpeak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com and streaming on the web at BrooklynCollegeRadio.org and 1090 AM in the Brooklyn College area. This is episode 29 of GeekSpeak, and I'm trying to change things up a bit here, trying to give the show a bit of a different feel in the opening. I know that the first one was done in approximately 5 seconds before my first episode, and since this is episode 29, we're getting close to episode 30 now, I think it's about time for a bit of a change. And, well, hopefully it is indeed a change for good and not a change for worse, but I'm going to be trying out a couple of different entries into the world of openings in the next couple of weeks and see which ones you guys like best. And obviously you can email me to that effect at speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. And also, I'm going to be opening up a contest for an opening to the show. So if anybody feels that they have what it takes to make themselves an opening for GeekSpeak, you can send that along to speakgeekspeak@gmail.com as well, and I will find the best one, and hopefully it will be a brand new opening for GeekSpeak. And I am working on the prize as of now. It will probably be a trade paperback for the series Avengers Forever, which is quite possibly one of the best Avengers series I have ever read, and I would highly recommend it. It's a Kurt Busiek 12-issue maxi series, which came out a little while back, and it was one heck of a series at that. So that's probably going to be what the prize is, along with a collection of music that I play here on the show. And by the way, before I get things going here, the music that you heard was compliments of ocremix.org, one of their newest mixes that was just put together. A whole bunch of people from the site at that, including people like Pixie Trix, who is the host of VGDJ at vgdj.net, and Zircon, and a couple of other people involved with that, and I thank you so much to Zircon for giving me permission to play said track on the show. And I'm slowly also going to be switching things over to the side of more pod-safe music, getting away from the anime music as time goes on, but that's going to be a gentle transition. But anyway, now that I've gotten that out of the way, let's get things going on today's show. And we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. It's a video game centric show, mostly Revolution news to report. The specs for the Revolution are out. What is the CPU power of the Revolution, and what peripherals should you expect to use on said Nintendo Revolution? Well, I'm going to get into that on today's show. Also, we have Zelda news coming out, and it looks damn interesting. We got ourselves a Zelda game for the DS ready to roll here, and also a blast from the past, which is not exactly a good one. And I'm talking about the Philips CDI, one of the worst gaming blunders in the history of gaming, and one of the worst business blunders as well. Philips lost so much money on that product. It was a $400 box. It did very, very little, and it was certainly not worth the price at that time or at any time. And I am talking about, oh God, wow, it hurts me to even talk about it, seriously. The Zelda games and Link games, some of the most painful things I have ever seen in my life. And we'll get into that as the show goes on. Also, Apple and iTunes and iPods are introducing a volume control software. And this is basically going to stop people from going deaf, which is probably a good move on their part because, well, lawsuits are getting bigger and bigger, and guess what? We don't really want to go deaf anytime soon. That would probably be a good thing for their sakes. Probably, at least. Now, Also, something I don't really talk too much about, Kodak. Kodak has been accused of harming digital photo quality for photos that are submitted to their website. Now, this is something that's usually guaranteed from people associated with companies. They want to make sure that the photos that they put in will be the same quality once they're put out, but apparently that has not been the case with Kodak, and we're certainly going to get into that. And also news on Microsoft, they want people to change all of their websites just to make browsing on IE7 better. I think they would have a better shot of getting a hole driven into their head, but that's just me. Anyway, let's get things going here. And also, by the way, we're going to have a quick review, if I have time, for Cromartie High School, which is an anime that I played some music for on the show, and I just finished it, just finished the DVDs of that over the past weekend, and it is the most insane thing I've ever watched in my life, and I'll get more in-depth in that. But let's start things off with the Revolution. Revolution's horsepower has been revealed, and IGN.com has the specs to the Nintendo Revolution, and, you know, things are looking pretty good, I gotta say. Now, the specs for this system are going to allow the Revolution to not only have a cheap system, but they're also looking to get games for under the norm of $60. They're going to try and get games $50 and under. And by the way, that's news courtesy of IGN as well. And Travis from Boston, Massachusetts brought that my way. So thank you very much, Travis. But here is the full news from revolution.ign.com on the Revolution's horsepower. Studios give us the inside scoop on the clock rates for Broadway and Hollywood. How do the CPU and GPU stack up on paper? Nintendo president Satoru Iwata, and I'm sure I screwed that up like I do every other Japanese name I say on this show, said that his company is not interested in waging a technology war against Microsoft and Sony, whose next-generation consoles promise more power and intern high-definition graphics. The Big N's still codenamed Revolution system is, in contrast, designed to be quiet, small, and affordable. Nintendo has invested millions in an innovative new controller that has the potential to permanently change the way people play games for the better, the company hopes. As a result, players would be hard-pressed to find any Nintendo executive willing to go on the record about Revolution technical specs. In fact, former Nintendo of Europe marketing chief Jim Merrick indicated that in an interview last year that the company may never divulge details on Revolution's horsepower to the public. Obviously, Nintendo is unable to take the same approach with game studios, many of whom are currently working with Revolution development hardware and in possession of finalized system specifications. So here is what we have on the Revolution. Insiders stress the Revolution runs on an extension of the Gecko and Flipper architecture that powered GameCube, which is why studios who worked on GCN, GameCube that is, will have no problem making the transition to the new machine, they say. IBM's Broadway CPU is clocked at 728 megahertz, according to updated Nintendo documentation. By comparison, GameCube's Gecko CPU ran at 480 megahertz. The original Xbox CPU, admittedly a different architecture altogether, was clocked at 733 megahertz. Oh my god. Meanwhile, Xbox 360 runs three symmetrical cores at 3.2 gigahertz. That's a huge difference there. From megahertz to gigahertz in one system. That's the Xbox for you. Clearly, numbers don't mean anything, but on paper, Revolution's CPU falls performance-wise somewhere well beyond GameCube and just shy of the original Xbox. However, it's important to remember that there is no way to accurately gauge the performance difference between GCN's PowerPC-based architecture and the Intel-based CPU of Xbox. Revolution's ATI provided Hollywood GPU clocks in at 243 megahertz. By comparison, GameCube's GPU ran at 162 megahertz, while the GPU on the original Xbox was clocked at 233 megahertz. So what you're getting here is innovation over specifications. You're getting a system that is different than anything else that has been out there before. You're getting a controller that is state-of-the-art, and you're getting games that are cheap, affordable, and hopefully fun, as opposed to the best damn graphics you've ever seen. Now, again, we don't know what the Revolution is going to look like. For all we know, it could turn out to be some of the best graphics we've ever seen, but we'll have to wait and see until the demos are out there, until the games are out there. But I think this is a good idea for Nintendo, because a lot of people out there can't afford the $400 that you got to put down for an Xbox 360, or the possible even $600 you're going to have to put up for the PS3, or maybe even more than that. No, people want affordability. People want to be able to go to the store and buy a game without having to open up their life savings to do so. And with the GameCube, you were able to do that. With the Revolution, you'll be able to do that even better. It's a great idea to have games as cheap as $50 or less, because just think of how much money the sports franchise, the 2K sports franchise, made on their $20 games they put out for the PlayStation 2 and for the Xbox. And for the GameCube as well, I believe. I'm not quite sure if it was on GameCube, but I think it might have been. But those 2K series sold out, basically. They were amazing games. They were state-of-the-art. They were better than Madden, according to some people. And they were only $20, and that was a great reason to buy them. Well, guess what? If the Revolution's games are only $50 a piece, or $40 a piece, or $30 a piece, you're going to get plenty of people running to the stores to get them. And going along with the idea that the Revolution will be the more cost-effective thing to find, over at joystick.com, they've got information on what the Revolution is going to support hard drive-wise and other third-party storage devices. And you're going to be damn surprised by this. The Nintendo Revolution will not feature an internal hard drive, which is something that is a bit of a surprise there. Instead, the unit will utilize 512 megabytes of flash memory and built-in SD memory card support. In addition, Iwata, obviously the president, as I mentioned before, and once again screwing up his name, remarks imply that Nintendo intends to ultimately leave the best storage solutions up to the consumer's discretion, a freedom that could give Nintendo an edge in terms of consumer satisfaction over Sony and Microsoft. For example, a quick search on Circuit City's website yields Seagate's 160-gigabyte external drive for only $60 with rebate. Compare that to Microsoft's $100 20-gigabyte 360 hard drive manufactured by Seagate, and there's no contest. And I agree with that profusely. All right, if you're going to let people basically save their games or utilize a hard drive by just using their flash card that they already have or their memory stick that they already have, you are going to get so many more people on board for the Revolution. I mean, the fact that I'm not going to have to buy anything else, basically, I have a 1 gig flash drive that I use for the station and for my own use. If I'm able to use that on the Revolution, well, hell, that's more of a reason for me to buy it. I don't have to buy anything new. And if I do need to buy something new, I'll get myself an external hard drive. See, that's where Xbox 360 drops the ball. The fact that they made their hard drive so small in comparison to other gigabyte hard drives out there, the fact that they could have very well had something that was as extensive as 160 gigabytes, and yet they didn't, well, that just proves Microsoft's strategy of charge a lot for a little. And that's the case with a lot of their operating systems as well. I mean, the bare bones operating system for Windows XP, the home edition, is a hell of a lot of money and always has been. And I'm sure that Vista will probably be as expensive, possibly even more. While meanwhile, it made so much more sense to buy professional, and that's what I run at home, because you get so many more features in that. But it was an upgrade of, I believe, at least another $50 or $60 in order for me to get that on my system when I purchased it. So Microsoft has been known to overcharge. With the 360, they tried to make it as cheap as possible, you could tell, but they failed to realize that people care as much about peripherals as they care about the system itself. If you give them a crappy controller, like the original Xbox controller, don't even get me started on that clunker, or you give them terrible memory support, people are not going to want to buy your system. And a lot of people out there just went and bought that hard drive knowing that they would need it for their system. And, you know, I guess good for them. But at the same time, you could have done so much better. You could have gotten a bigger hard drive. You could have gotten much more space to work with. And yet you settled. You settled for what Xbox was willing to give you. And, well, sometimes you just got to settle. But in this instance, you really should not have. That's my take on that, at least. So the Revolution is looking better and better every single day I see it. And one of the big games that's going to be featured on the Revolution is the brand new Link game, the new Legends of Zelda that will be coming out that will be compatible with the Revolution's brand spanking new controller and will also be available on the GameCube, if I remember correctly, and I believe that is the case. And I've got some Zelda news to report after this nice little interlude. You gotta love it. Stories seem to be going in threes on today's show. Three bits of news, as I just reported on the Revolution, basically the specs, the number on the game titles, and the bit on the hard drives. Well, now I've got three bits of Zelda news to report, and I'll start off with the one that's probably the juiciest, and that, of course, is that Zelda is on its way to the Nintendo DS. That's right, Zelda DS is coming, and it's in the cel-shaded style of the previous Zelda game that came out for the GameCube, which is going to be kind of interesting, to say the least. And here is the story, once again, courtesy of my buddy Travis in Boston, Massachusetts, and here is what he has to say, courtesy of GameSpot.com. Link is on his way to Nintendo's portable in an all-new adventure, The Legend of Zelda Phantom Hourglass. The first trailer is inside, and I will link to this in the show notes so you guys can see the trailer, and it is looking damn good at that. The game appears to use the stylus in a few different ways, such as drawing an hourglass shape to open a door, plotting out the path of a ship on the ocean, and writing numbers, though the reason for the number writing are currently unknown. Gamers will also be able to use the touchscreen to direct your boomerang shots, as shown when Link hurled his weapon towards targets on the opposite side of the chasm. Graphically, the game has a cel-shaded look that is similar to Wind Waker, though there's a bit of Four Swords influence in there as well. The Phantom Hourglass Link is almost a spitting image of his younger self in Wind Waker, with large anime-style doe eyes. The game is shown on the upper screen of the DS, while the lower screen displays your map, but occasionally the two will switch places. The gameplay appears to rely on some of the same puzzle-based dungeon mechanics seen in previous installments, including hitting multiple colored buttons to affect different things in the world. The brief demo being shown at the Nintendo keynote also showed Navi, the fairy-like sparkling glow that let you see what you were targeting back in Ocarina of Time, as well as an outdoor battle against a cool squid-like boss that was perched atop some pillars. Link could attack from the bottom screen with projectiles and knock the boss to the bottom screen, where he would finish him off with his trusty blade. There's also a clip of Link sailing the sea in a boat and attacking enemies with a cannon. The Legend of Zelda Phantom Hourglass is currently scheduled to be released later this year. They'll have more details as they become available. And I think that this is a great promotional move for Nintendo. They're swinging things in their favor. They really are. With the games that are coming out, with the new Super Mario Bros. That's coming out on the DS, with the Legend of Zelda coming out for the GameCube / Revolution / Go / whatever you want to call it, and with this brand new Zelda game coming out for the DS, there's going to be a lot of great things to find on Nintendo platforms for people who have been fans of the Nintendo series for a long time now. And I myself love retro, always have, always will, as I've mentioned so many times on the show. One thing that I am very much anticipating is this Zelda game, and with the way things have been going lately, with the fact that the Mario game looks amazing, and this Zelda game, as I look at the screenshots, looks graphically gorgeous for a DS. I mean, it's basically exactly the same way it looked in Wind Waker on the GameCube, which is a great, 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 great move on them. I mean, as long as they can use their processors to get a good product out there, they might as well do so, and I think they have done just that here with this Zelda game. And, well, if the gameplay actually utilizes the stylus properly, which it probably will, I mean, I'd be very shocked if it doesn't, you're looking at one hell of a game here. Innovation is what Nintendo has been all about ever since the NES first came out. They wanted to invent a new style of gaming. I mean, with Duck Hunt, with the gun you were able to use to shoot the ducks, that was the first time they really used a light gun effectively in gaming. That you can attest to the Nintendo marketing scheme. The Power Glove, sure, it was a pain in the butt to use, but it was fun. Admit it. The Power Glove, sure, it's a big joke now, but it was certainly something big back then, and it was innovative. They tried it with the Virtual Boy and failed miserably because, well, who wants to put a giant piece of hardware on their head to play a game that's entirely red? Yeah, no thanks on that. But they recovered. The DS was a great improvement. The stylus, originally just a gimmick, has proven itself to be very effective with particular games, and as more and more games come out, there's more and more reason to use it. I mean, with Mario Kart DS, It's great using those dual screens with the Sonic game that just came out. It's old-fashioned Sonic gaming on the DS, and Zelda will probably be able to use that stylus pretty damn well. So it's a good move to bring it over to the DS, and it gives more hype to Nintendo as the ever-important next-generation console comes closer to a reality. And speaking of Zelda, story number two that came out, there's a full-length Legends of Zelda, The Hero of Time movie in the works, and it is a fan movie. And this is coming out of LegendofZeldaSeries.com, and here is the news on that. Nintendo are adamant that an official Legend of Zelda movie will not be made. That means that fans who wish to see a Zelda movie have been left to their own devices. However, most of these never progress beyond mere ideas, a couple of pages of script, or maybe a short video of a guy running around with a sword. Until now. Bum, bum, bum. The Hero of Time, Legend of Zelda, is an independent Zelda movie that a small group of producers and film buffs called BMB Finishes have been making. They've been working on this movie for the past 2 years, and it is now nearing completion. It is a fully independent production that, when finished, will be promoted as a festival piece, as well as being a fan film. All of the people working on the movie are big fans of the Zelda series, and they have put a ton of creativity and effort into this film. The movie is being directed by Joel Mush. Mush, that's a great name. Who also produced the film along with David Blaine. Is that the David Blaine? I'm wondering, is that the same David Blaine who did all the magic and stuff like that? I doubt it is, but that'd be really interesting if he's backing this movie. The movie's story is roughly based off that of Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Link, who has been raised by the Kokiri, is sent to Hyrule City by the Great Deku Tree. Once there, he meets Princess Zelda, who tells him what the Triforce symbol on his hand means and exactly who he is. Meanwhile, Ganon has arranged a banquet for the king, but this gesture, seemingly in good faith, is actually a part of his evil scheme. Now, if there's one thing that I've always been a fan of for the longest time now, are fan films. Fan films are done by fans who usually know a series better than the creators do. I mean, they pay so much attention to this stuff, and finally they go out there and realize, you know, I could probably do this as good as they do it, or maybe even better. And the first one that I really saw was called Batman Dead End, and Batman Dead End was all about a meeting between Batman and an alien and a predator. It was just fun. Batman looked amazing. Joker looked fantastic. The predators and the aliens were superb, excellent costumes, and it was done by the guys who did the Alien and Predator movies, the makeup for them, so that's the reason why it looks so great. Then I saw World's Finest, which was done by the same people. It was a fan trailer, which was done with Superman and Batman. I saw the Ghostbusters versus Freddy fan film, which was fantastic. And now that I'm thinking about it, I probably have talked about this at least once on the show because I feel like deja vu all over again right now. Probably one of the earlier episodes, like episode 2 or 3 or something like that. But still, fan movies are a wonderful genre and something that I look forward to watching. And I look forward to watching this Zelda movie as well because it could turn out to be really damn good. Other fan films that have been great, Pink 5 in the Star Wars universe was great, and Troopers in that was another great one. Fans know what they're doing. A lot of the times, even though they have a low budget, they put out something that is true to character, true to form, and something that even the creators would smile at. And, well, that's really all we can hope about this fan film. Hopefully it will be as good as a major motion picture would have been if Nintendo had decided to do so, but I think it's probably a good idea that they don't, because unless you're getting somebody like Peter Jackson to do a Zelda movie, it would just not work. Because Legend of Zelda is, it's one of those things that's so hard to touch if you're not Nintendo, and my next story will definitely talk about that. It's very hard to get Zelda right, and I think Hollywood would never really be able to do that. But guess what? Fans know the series, and they could probably get it right. And hopefully this fan film will do just that. They got a guy who actually looks somewhat like Link, so, well, this might be something I actually want to see. Also, I'd love to find out if the David Blaine in this is actually the David Blaine that, well, locked himself in a box for a long time. It'd be very interesting indeed to know whether that's true or not. We're just going to have to wait and see. Now, going with the good Zelda and the good DS game and the good, hopefully good, fan-made movie that's coming out, we have two absolutely horrible, 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 horrible Zelda endings that people were able to find on the Philips CDI. What the Philips CDI was, obviously it was known as the Compact Disc Interactive. It was a $400 multimedia CD player that basically had a whole bunch of games on it that had very little game to it and a whole lot of movies. They tried their best to have endings that were showing off the hardware, and in the process, they ended up with games that stunk and movies that were incredibly, incredibly cheesy. And at the time, CD really was a new medium when it came to gaming. I mean, you had the Saturn out there for a while, and you had the Sega CD out there before the Saturn. Both of those tanked entirely, and you can put CDI on that list. Philips was originally going to release the SNES CD that was in the works for a while there, but so was Sony, and we all know what that turned into. That was originally called, guess what? The PlayStation. And that eventually became a completely different system. But the CD-ROM for the Super NES, after it was with Sony, was with Philips. And what I'm going to play for you right now, courtesy of YouTube and Kotaku.com for actually pointing this out to me, here are these absolutely horrible Zelda endings, and I'm going to link to these in the show notes. You have to hear these, if only for the cheesy dialogue and the absolutely terrible music. It is the epitome of what you should not do to a franchise. I am so happy that stuff like Game Boy and the SNES and the N64 were able to save the franchise of Zelda. And I hope they learned their lesson to make sure that nobody other than Nintendo ever makes a Link or Zelda game ever again. So here are the endings to Link the Faces of Evil and Zelda the Wand of Gamelon. So here we have it. And oh my dear God, I'm vomiting just looking at this. So I'm going to play this for you and we'll be right back. Little intro music there. Here we go. He's jumping now. I'm going to do commentary.
Join me, Link.
Here we go.
And I will make your face the greatest in Korodai, or else you will die.
Now the 2-minute fight scene in between Link and this other guy, and now he's changing and getting some random book thingy, which makes no sense at all, and apparently this book just saved the day. No!
Not into the pit! It burns!
Now apparently he won, and is now going to celebrate by jumping through a hole in the wall any second now. There we go. And now for cheesy ending stuff. He's now going onto a platform, and he poked somebody, and now let the movie begin.
Why'd you do that?
I just saved you from Ganon.
You did not.
Well done, Link. Ganon is once again imprisoned. Come. Look. Already Korodai is returning to harmony. The birds are singing. Isn't it beautiful?
Golly!
As it is written, you, Link, are the hero of Korodai!
I guess that's worth a kiss, huh?
Ha! Huh.
I won!
He won! Yay! And about three people care because about three people played that game. So here, going from that to the other, this is actually from Zelda's Adventure, I believe. And, oh my God, I'm just, I'm sorry, I'm taking this in right now, and I can't believe that Nintendo ever let this happen. Here's the ending to this as it gets underway here. Oh my God. You know, and also
you
Zelda could stay out of the game, so here we go.
To my lair? You must die!
The baddie, who looks like a giant mouse, just threatened Zelda, and now she's fighting and jumping and getting a random staff, which apparently is as powerful as that book was, and now he's dead.
The chains! No! You haven't seen the last of me!
We have seen the last of him, considering that, well, this game was terrible, and so was the franchise at this point. Only for a short while, and she just got a random key, and now she's going through a door, and going up a ladder, and here we go, almost there. Oh my dear God, my eyes are bleeding at this point. I think my nose will start bleeding any second now. This is absolutely terrible. Somebody please make the pain stop, make it go away. Nintendo, how could you ever sign a contract with these people? I am hurting. Okay, here we go. Yes, now she's going over to the Dalai Lama, apparently, and jumping up to say hello to him, and she pokes him in the abdomen.
Father!
You've saved me!
Here's the traitor, Your Majesty!
Please, Your Omnipotence, have mercy!
After you've scrubbed all the floors in Hyrule, then we can talk about mercy. Take him away!
Yes, my liege.
I wonder what happened to Link.
Oh, he was a boar anyway.
Stop looking at yourself.
What happened?
Nothing, Link. We were just about to have a feast.
Great!
Somebody please pass me the barf bag. Yeah, Nintendo, I have a feeling that the Link and Zelda games that are going to be coming out in the future are not going to be as bad as this. And by the way, you have not seen bad animation until you have seen the endings to this. And like I said, I will link to it in the show notes. It is utterly terrible and just makes me want to poke my eyes out with two sharp sticks so that I will never have to watch this again. And I love sharing things like that with my public. Oh, yeah. And by the way, just need to mention this. Thank you guys so much for listening. I reached past 100 people subscribed at once on FeedBurner for the first time this past Tuesday. Had 104 people on at once. And, well, I basically almost teared up a bit. Thank you guys so much for actually tuning in week after week to Geek Speak. And it's an absolute pleasure putting this out for you guys. And you're the reason why I do it week in and week out. So anyway, hope you guys were not too disgusted by the Zelda that I just shared with you, but at least we have a good fan-made film and a good DS game and hopefully a good GameCube/Revolution game coming. Let's wash this out of our memories with soap now, shall we? So one of the main things about using an iPod that has been a major, major problem ever since they first came out is the volume limit. Why is it so bad? Well, quite frankly, it's too frickin' loud. And, well, there have been lawsuits filed that hearing loss, or at least partial hearing loss, has been attributed to the iPod headphones, which, by the way, one thing that I definitely need to recommend to anybody who purchases an iPod, as soon as you purchase that iPod, throw away your iPod headphones. They might be comfortable, but they are terrible for your ears. And there's so many better products out there that will probably be much better for your hearing in the long run. So please, whatever you do, don't stick with the iPod headphones. For your sake, just don't. Anyway, now Apple basically have stepped up to the plate and have spoken that, well, we're tired of lawsuits happening. Okay, let's get it done. It's something that really should have happened a while back, and I'm glad it's actually happening now. And this is coming to me courtesy of David Price, who is my go-to man, as always. That much will never change. Here we go. Here is the news. Apple lets parents turn that garbage down, courtesy of CNN.com. New iPod software lets users set maximum volume. California, this is coming out of California, obviously. Owners of recent iPods will now be able to set how loud their digital music players can go. Apple Computer Inc., facing complaints and a lawsuit claiming the popular player can cause hearing loss, made the setting available as part of a new software update Wednesday. The free download applies to the iPod Nano and the iPod models with video playback capabilities. See, they won't even call it the iPod Video anymore. It's the iPod models with video playback capabilities. Wow, fantastic. Parents also can use the feature to set a limit on their child's iPod and lock it with a code, the company added. That's pretty interesting right there. As the leading provider of digital music players, Apple continuously brings iPod customers innovative and easy-to-use solutions. Greg Joswiak, Apple's vice president for iPod marketing, said in a statement, "With the increased attention in this area, we want to offer customers an easy-to-use option to set their own personal volume limit." Yeah, great. It's an innovative and creative idea. No, it's called we're covering our ass because we don't want any more lawsuits. Simple as that. Apple ships a warning with each iPod that cautions permanent hearing loss may occur if earphones or headphones are used at high volume. Yes, and also, this just in, if you stay out in the sun too long without sunscreen, you might get burned. Just in, just for people out there who have not realized that. Dear God, it's so freaking stupid. And there's so many people out there who will listen to everything they have on full blast, no matter how dangerous it is to your hearing, no matter how difficult it is for people to understand a word you're saying when you're screaming so freaking loud when you have them on. See, and another thing, that's a pet peeve of mine. When people put on headphones and try to have a conversation with somebody, and one of them's like, "Hey guys, what's going on?" And the other one's like, "Hi, what's up?" Because they have their freaking headphones on so loud that they don't even know they're talking that loud. You know, that's probably a sign you have your music a bit too high. It won't kill you to turn it down just a tad, you know, just a little smidgen, because, well, chances are you'll probably be better off in the long run. Both you and the person that you're talking to will be better off because, well, he won't have to deal with you screaming so loud that you're giving him hearing loss, and you won't have to deal with hearing loss at all because you'll have your iPod at a reasonable volume. And a lot of players automatically set a limit to their players that will allow people to listen to it loud, but not loud enough to cause any severe damage. Well, this was not the case here, and for the longest time, Apple was screwing themselves. Now they actually introduced this. Now, the idea that parents can lock the limit with a code is probably a great thing because, well, you know that right away, if a parent sets a limit to anything, the kid will immediately want to try and break it. And if you put a code in there that the guy doesn't know, you know, if he set it to 8675309 and your kid was born after the year 1989, they probably won't know that song and they won't know the code. But still, it's probably a good idea to apply this feature if you've got like a young kid or even an older kid that is just so stubborn that he's going to try and listen to his music as loud as he can to try and maybe drown out the parent or something, which, well, that's kind of silly and kind of innovative at the same time. But still, it's not a good idea. It never has been, never will be. Just whatever you do, don't cause yourself hearing loss. Be smart. Listen to it at a reasonable volume. And people out there who say, "But Ian, I take the train on a regular basis. I need to make my iPod very loud so that I can't hear the..." on a regular basis. And, well, I have an idea for you here. It's a pretty good one. It's called noise-cancel headphones. You might have heard of them. They're these headphones that wrap around your ears and make it so that you don't hear anything, which means you can listen to your music as low as you want, as loud as you want, but you still won't hear what's going on around you. Great idea. Invest into it. Don't use those freaking earbuds. You're going to kill yourselves. And I myself just switched away from earbuds that I was using. I had earbuds that I was using out of Sony that were actually pretty decent, and they go in differently than normal earbuds. They go in on a side, so they don't really affect your hearing too much, and you can still hear things going around you, but they do cover your ears enough where it's almost like noise cancel. I was using those for the longest time, and of course, they kept breaking on me. There was a defect inside the headphones themselves, and it's something that Sony will never fix ever because they like, well, they like these cheap headphones because people buy them by the dozen. But these headphones, they last about 3 or 4 months, and then right away, one of the ears dies out, which is a major problem. So I purchased cheap Sony headphones that are go over the ear, and they've been working very well. They have a bit of a longer cord, which is a bit of a pain in the butt. I just got to make sure not to step on it or anything. But they're decent enough. And also, they're open-eared, so that even when they're on my ear, I can still hear what's going around me, which is probably a good idea. No matter how many people don't like the train, chances are you're probably going to want to know if the train's about to blow up in 3 seconds. And if you're wearing noise cancel, that completely cancel out the entire world, you'll be the only one left on that train. How about that? So please, be smart, people. It's not too terrible to hear the world around you. Even if some people are idiots, just don't listen to them. And, well, listen to your music as loud as you want without killing your hearing. I say this not only for you, but also for me, because just think how many listeners I would lose if people started losing their hearing. Because guess what? I'm a podcast. In order for people to understand what I am saying right now, they need their hearing. Without their hearing, they will not hear me speak. So please, think of the podcasters. Think of the podcasters. What'd you say? So, yeah, you guys might have heard that Microsoft is coming out with this new browser, Internet Explorer or something like that. I don't know. I've never really heard of it. IE7 is going to be released sometime in the next millennium. They're working on the betas, and they're trying to make them better, and everything's happy, blah, 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 blah. One thing that it will not be using is the older ActiveX controls that other websites have been using. And, well, Microsoft wants everybody to change their websites. Great idea, really. Not. David Price gave me this story, and I definitely need to talk about it here, courtesy of eWeek.com, which is a very informative website, I must say. Microsoft delays IE's ActiveX D-Day. Microsoft is moving full stream ahead with a plan to permanently modify the way Internet Explorer renders multimedia content on web pages, but in what amounts to an admission that the changes could be disruptive. The software maker plans to give web developers an extra 60 days. Oh yeah, 60 days. That's going to be a long time in the history of the world to continue making preparations. The IE update, which results from a multi-million dollar patent spat with Eolus Technologies, changes the way the browser handles ActiveX controls and could have a significant impact on how online advertising and streaming media content is delivered over the internet. According to the information reaching eWeek, Microsoft announced the plans for a one-time 60-day extension during a conference call with industry partners on March 28th, wherein Redmond officials reiterated the need for web pages to be completely reauthored to avoid possible disruptions. If websites and advertising units aren't reauthored, Microsoft warns that ActiveX controls and Java applets will require user activation before the user can interact with the control. So, yeah, Microsoft screwed itself again. Big shock there. A patent once again blows up in their face. And, well, patent disputes, I've kind of gotten used to that with Microsoft and with other companies as well. Sony, I'm looking in your direction. I mean, these companies just never learn. You would think by now, after the disputes that Microsoft have had in the past with other patents and with other companies such as Sony having disputes with patents, that Microsoft would sort of be smart enough to lay off, sort of break away from the idea of, this is really awesome, I want it in my operating system, or I want it in my browser, but I think I'm gonna not tell anybody that I wasn't the one who created it. Yeah, brilliant business scheme there. I'd love to see just how much money you're going to blow in legal bills once this is all wrapped up. And obviously, Microsoft is looking to avoid that because, well, that's the whole reason why they took it out, because they don't want to pay anybody for this dispute. So the easy way out is to design things from the ground floor up and make life easier for themselves. But guess what? By making life easier for themselves, they're screwing over the user in typical Microsoft fashion. Do you honestly think that every website out there who uses ActiveX, who uses Java, are going to redesign their website from the ground up just to please Microsoft? I don't think so. I really don't know why they even hold on to ActiveX. ActiveX has been proven to be one of the main reasons why Microsoft browsers have so many damn security holes. ActiveX tweaks and Java applet tweaks are so easy to do inside IE, it's not even funny. But, well, they're persistent. They believe that this can work out for them. They believe that we're all wrong and we're communists. Okay, maybe not. But at this point, I'm really barely even caring about Microsoft anymore. They could have done so much with Internet Explorer, and instead they just hung out while everybody else was doing better work. They decided, hey, you know what? Let's just sit back and relax and let Firefox update themselves. Yeah, Opera looks pretty good. Let's see what they do, and maybe we'll come out there. You know, Safari is doing a pretty good job. Let's not even bother making something for the Apple anymore, which is what they did, i.e. for Mac no longer exists. There's a reason why Firefox's market share has gone up and up and up lately. There's a reason why Macintosh's market share keeps going up. Microsoft forgot how to please consumers. You do not please consumers or web designers by telling them they need to completely redesign their website just to please Microsoft, just to make their patent dispute a bit easier. That's not how you do it. And there are millions, billions even, of websites out there. Do you honestly think that every one of them is going to redesign it? I don't think so. I myself am not touching my website for Microsoft. If Blogger wants to change things for me, by all means, but I am not changing my web design at all to please them. Besides, most of the people who code to my website through the stat counter that I have are mostly Firefox users. Oddly enough, FeedBurner tells me that there are more Internet Explorer guys, but that's only counting the amount of people who go through the feed, so not the people who actually go to the website. So I guess that's a bit different. But still, Microsoft has kicked themselves in the ass yet again, and I am not surprised by this at all. I would actually not comply at a protest, just to show them how screwed they would be, just to show them how many complaints people would file against Internet Explorer, the new IE7, and I don't even know if this is going to affect IE6. They might actually put a patch out there for IE6, for all I know, and make this active, to get rid of the ActiveX copyright dispute. Because they're going to want to try and get rid of as many copies of this as possible to make their lives simpler. But like I said, you're not thinking of the consumer. Microsoft, you've lost your way yet again. And I hope you're happy for yourselves. I hope you love it when millions of people start coming to you and saying, why doesn't my website work in Internet Explorer? I don't understand. Oh, I guess I didn't get the memo. Microsoft, you're going to get screwed all over again, and I will be the one who laughs and laughs and laughs some more when it does indeed happen, because, hey, it's fun laughing at your misfortune. You're Microsoft. You're the reason why spyware exists. I'm sorry. It's true. It hurts, don't it? Let's get into the Kodak news now, as Kodak has officially been accused of harming digital photo quality. Wow. Talk about people being screwed. Microsoft is screwed today, and now Kodak is going to get screwed as well. This story comes courtesy of EET.com. A former employee has accused Eastman Kodak Company of illegally tampering with the quality of customers' digital photos and making false advertising claims, according to a statement issued Wednesday by the former employee's attorney. Oh boy. This is going to be bad for Kodak. Maya Raber, former Kodak director of engineering, filed a lawsuit in Alameda County, Superior Court Tuesday, alleging wrongful termination by the Kodak Imaging Network and parent company Kodak. The suit claims that Raber was fired in retaliation for complaining about a Kodak project that Raber alleges deceives customers and irreversibly damages customers' photo files. Kodak disregarded customer interest in its efforts to save money, Raber said during the statement. The plan was to hide behind the trusted Kodak brand instead of promoting and protecting it. Wow. Kodak has been a trusted brand for so long now. I mean, Kodak is synonymous with taking pictures. So right away, you would think going to their website would probably be a great idea for uploading your digital photos. Well, think twice now. And right away, I'm thinking Kodak has a business plan. Okay, Kodak has to survive in the world of scanners, in the world of digital cameras that just upload themselves to your computer that you can basically work on yourselves. They have to do something to survive. By downgrading people's quality, that's not a way to survive. That's a way to shoot yourself in the foot. That's a way for people to believe that maybe Kodak's lying when they say that they're trying to help us. Maybe they're just out for themselves. Well, all companies are. But maybe Kodak is out for themselves a bit more than other people are. It's incredibly careless of them to downgrade their content like this. I mean, if you're downgrading that quality, well, expect backlash. Just like Microsoft will expect backlash with this IE thing, Kodak is going to expect backlash here. But then again, this could just be the angry musings of an employee that got fired. I mean, we don't know. Sure, she's claiming that this is the case, but is it really? I mean, I'd love to see people out there who use Kodak on a regular basis, use Kodak.com for the digital photos. And if anybody who's listening to this podcast does indeed do that, please shoot me an email so I'll be able to know what your experiences with the site are. But, well, I'm sort of hoping for their sake that this is all a lie and that things are still good as new there, because if they're not, well, Kodak is going to be in a lot of trouble really, really soon. Kodak is trusted. They're a name brand. Well, looks like yet another name brand has been lying to us for a long time now. If it's true, I'm not buying Kodak anymore. I'll just go with one of the others. All right, so some of you who have been following the show for a while are probably wondering why I am reviewing Cromartie High School again. And the very answer to that is the last time that I reviewed it, I was only about 4 episodes into the series. Since then, my girlfriend and her family were gracious enough to get me the last 3 volumes of Cromartie High School for my birthday this past January. And I just got around to watching the last 3 volumes this past weekend over at my girlfriend's place in Massachusetts for her birthday. So I guess everything goes full circle or something along those lines. The main thing that I have discovered with this anime, and even more so than I found that in the first 4 episodes, this thing is nuts. It is absolutely nonsensical, and in a good way. Not to the point where, you know, people are just taking craps everywhere and a guy is whacking somebody over the head with a mallet every 3 seconds. No, it's not that sort of comedy. What it is so out of left field that all of a sudden something will just happen and you'll have no idea why, and they won't explain it, and half the time they won't even notice it. And then by the next episode, they have completely forgotten about this. I'll give you an example. One of the characters in the show is a tough guy. And this tough guy character is the leader of the first years, basically. And he has motion sickness problems. Whenever he gets into a car, he feels like puking. Whenever he gets into a bus, he feels like puking. Well, the class goes on a class trip where they go on a plane. And the plane ends up getting hijacked. The character ends up in the U.S. somehow. And the hijacker takes his place in the class, and the hijacker is wearing a Lucha Libre mask, and nobody seems to notice at all. This is the sort of anime that Cromartie High School is. If I didn't endorse it enough the last time around, I am endorsing the rest of it right now. These three volumes are wonderful. They're just the best things to do when you want to take your mind off of something is to watch something nonsensical. And I have been pretty stressed lately. A whole bunch of stuff happening at the same time, you know, with midterms and with classes. I haven't really had a chance to just relax. And Cromartie High School relaxed me. There's a character in it that looks just like Seng from Final Fantasy VII, which I mentioned the last time around. And this guy wants to take over the world. He's basically Brain. And he has a lackey who is Pinky. And the lackey just hangs around him because if he didn't hang around this guy, then he would no longer be called such and such as lackey. They would have to actually call him by his real name. And every single time he tries to give them his real name, they don't let him because his name is just called lackey to them. That is Cromartie High School. Last episode of the series. And again, I'm not giving anything away here because it's Cromartie. Okay, there's no plot going on here. It's the Seinfeld of animes. Nothing happening. Show about nothing. In the last episode, for no reason whatsoever, all of a sudden, all of the characters are girls, including the Freddie Mercury character. So the Freddie Mercury character with a mustache all of a sudden has gigantic, gigantic breasts. And they basically replay the first episode for half of the final episode, only they're girls now. Mechazawa, the robot in the series, goes through a series of changes, and they even introduce his kid brother, Mechareta, I believe his name is, because he keeps going, Mechareta, Mechareta, Mechareta. That's all he does. And he keeps getting smaller and smaller as the series goes on. It's just so out there. I mean, there's out there, and then there's Cromartie High School. You can't even put it into words. It really makes me want to see the live action of this, because they just made a movie. And now I'm thinking, if this is completely insane, how insane will the movie be? The live-action movie that just came out of Japan. I gotta go read the manga now also to see if there's anything that was left out of the series, because I doubt there was, because this series is basically 26 episodes long. Each episode is 12 minutes. So it's basically a 13-episode series, if you put it that way, because most episodes of anything will be about 24 minutes long. So put it as a 13-episode series. The third disc of the series is by far my favorite, not because of the content, but because of the way the DVD is set up. You know that Martian voice that's on every single computer that you hate and you just want to hit? Well, this Martian voice is on every single menu of the DVD. Whenever you load anything up,
this is the menu screen of the DVD. On this screen, you choose which episode you would like to watch or whether you would like to go to a submenu. A submenu is, and it goes on and on from there. You click on the languages. This menu is for the choosing of languages only. You can choose between English or Japanese with subtitles. If you like another language, this is unavailable at this time.
It just goes on and on and on. You can have so much fun just listening to that and torturing yourself. Cromartie High, if I gave it a 4 out of 5 the last time around, which I believe I did, you have a 6 out of 5 now. Booyah! Cromartie High School is just so freaking insane that if you need something to wash your brain away, if you need something to just forget about everything that's happening in your life and just crack up and go WTF, mate, this is the series to watch. And I like to finish what I do. That's why I reviewed the rest of the series. Cromartie High School, I love you. Wow, I just said I love you to an anime series. I'm sorry, but I'm a fanboy. I'm a geek. I'm a geek. I'm a geek. The show's called Geek Speak. Live with it. It's wind up time here on Geek Speak, where I switch things over from the geek side of things to the sports side of things. And on today's episode, we need to talk about the New York Rangers. Well, when the Rangers came back from the Olympic break, it looked like things were in a bit of disarray. It looked like all of their players were tired, that nobody was ready to go out there and play a solid game of hockey. Well, things have changed, and things have changed pretty quickly for the Rangers. Now, when you look out on the ice, you're seeing people fighting. You're seeing people with a spirit again, with tenacity and strength to go out there and be the number one team in the East. And right now they are. They're on top of Philadelphia once again. For a while there, things were looking kind of bleak, but now they're back. And what are they doing? They're beating the teams that they should beat. They're beating the lesser teams that have no team compared to the Rangers. And that's important. If you go out there and lose to a team like the Islanders, then you've got issues because they're not that good anymore. They used to be one of the best teams in the league a couple of years back, but that's not the case any longer. The Rangers have to go out there, use Lundqvist as much as they can. Weeks is great, but if you use him too often in the week, that's a nice pun there. If you use him too often in the week, well, you're going to shoot yourselves in the foot because Lundqvist is the reason why you got what you did. Perfect example. This past week, Weeks was in for two periods, two and a half, really. They bring in Lundqvist for the third period. Rangers come back, score two goals, win in overtime, win in a shootout. That is what I want to see in hockey. I want to see a team go in there with their best damn players, even when they're not in the game. I want to see them put them in when it's important and win like they should. The Rangers proved a lot to me in this past week. They proved that they do have a chance to go in there and beat the best teams and the worst teams. Now, let's see how they do in the playoffs. I'm sure they're going to do very well. Let's see if they get past the second round. I hope they do. Let's see if Jaromir Jagr goes out there and continues to be the best damn player in the NHL. He's already broken some records on the Rangers. I see him continuing that as time goes on. Hopefully, he will. So, Rangers, you've got my support. Let's go out there and kick some butt in the playoffs now, shall we? That was the wind-up. Now here's the pitch every single Monday here on Brooklyn College Radio 1090 AM and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. You can hear me, Ian Levenstein, along with Jason Green, who will not be there this Monday because he will be at opening day at Shea. Joey Maggs, the ghost of Michael Hornstein, the ghost of Arrested Development. God dang it, I hate saying that so very, very much, but it looks like it's dead. Why, oh God, why? And the ghost of Futurama on television, but it might still end up on DVD on the Sporting Goods. The email address for GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's SPEAKGEEKSPEAK at gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums at speakgeekspeak.com/forums, FORUMS. And don't forget to vote for GeekSpeak on Podcast Alley if you so desire. The links are in the show notes. And by the way, just a refresher, the show notes are on the main page for every episode of GeekSpeak. So when you go to speakgeekspeak.com, that's where the show notes will be, links and all. The links will not show up in iTunes. It will only be a text version of said links. So if you want to have a rundown of what the show is going to be about, you can find that in iTunes in the show description. But the show notes themselves are at the website. And once again, a contest reminder, those of you who are interested in designing a opening for GeekSpeak, well, the contest is on. There's no deadline as of yet, but the prize will be a copy of Avengers Forever, the trade paperback maxi series, 12-issue series put out by Marvel, of Kurt Busiek with Carlos Pacheco art. It is gorgeous, and I love it. It is one of my favorite Avengers stories of all time, and also a collection of music that has been played here on GeekSpeak. I'll burn you a nice copy of that. So, other than that, this episode of GeekSpeak looks like it's pretty much done. I will see you on episode 30 next week. Episode 30, oh my God, I feel old. Have a great week! Enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. I will see you next time around. Nintendo Revolution CPU falls performance, wasn't it? It's in the shell. Wow, fantastic. The Acarnia of Time. Acarnia is not a word. There's a full length. Lymph is a word now, apparently, to me. Setting. Special. Legend of Zelda Acarnia. I did it again. Kodak has been a trusted and, well, yeah, that's not a way to surprise. And let's see if Jeremy. It's time to Speak Geek with the Geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.